This morning is our favourite readings service. This is where we invite people just to bring along a reading. I've no idea what people have brought along. I've no idea the length of the readings. So let's just sit back and listen and be surprised. Our first reader is Gavin.
From Imelda May. You don't get to be racist and Irish. You don't get to be proud of your heritage, plights and flights of freedom while leaning on the neck of another. You are not entitled to sing songs of heroes and martyrs, mothers and fathers who cried as they starved in a famine, or of brave-hearted, soft-spoken poets and artists lined up in a yard, blindfolded and bound, waiting for Godot, and point blank to sound. We immigrated, we took refuge, so cannot refuse when it's our time to return the favor. Land stolen, spirits broken, bodies crushed and swollen, unholy tokens of Christ nailed to a tree, that you hang around your neck like a noose of the free. Our color pasty, our accents thick, hands like shovels from mortar and brick lane, foundation of cities you now stand upon. Our suffering seeps from every stone, your opportunities arise from outstanding on the shoulders of our forefathers and our foremothers, who bore your mother's mother. Our music is for the righteous, our joys have been earned, well deserved and served to remind us to remember more blacks, more dogs, more Irish. Still labelled leprechauns, mix paddies, louts, were shouting to tell you our land, our laws are progressively out there. We're in a chrysalis, state of emerging into a new and more beautiful era. 40 shades better, unanimous in our rainbow vote, we found our stereotypical pot of gold, and my God, it's good. So join us, because you don't get to be racist and Irish.
Our next reader is Megan. This is my first time reading, I'm a little nervous. This is a book called Daily Afflictions by a writer and humorist and activist named Andrew Boyd. And it was a foundational text for me, I think, because it was published at a particular time in my development, but also the year was 2002. And I think we were first starting to grapple with the struggle between irony and sincerity and the untruths being told in politics and the media. And it's a very different landscape for all of that now, but I think the book still holds. The author writes in the introduction, "The Book of Daily Afflictions is not unlike a book of Psalms. Though dark, ironic, and irreverent, these afflictions are sacred poems that elevate and educate the spirit. Anyone acquainted with the many other books of daily meditations available today should find the format here familiar. Each entry has a heading, a quote, and a short message, and a closing meditation that you can repeat throughout the day. Likewise, this book's intentions are in perfect harmony with the best self-help traditions. It offers readers inspiration, practical advice, and food for thought as they navigate the jungle of existential terror and paradox that begins anew each day. This is not a book of daily affirmations, this is a book of daily afflictions. Although both kinds of books are affirming in their own way, they follow radically different approaches to affirmation. Affirmations bathe you in light and manifest all that is positive. They promise that you can attract what you wish for by visualizing it. Afflictions make no such promises. They remind you that when you feel desperate and alone, you are. Afflictions mobilize the suppressed power of your dark side. You can't avoid suffering. The right affliction, however, can make your suffering more meaningful. It won't tell you the answer, but it can deepen an unresolvable question. It won't help you find yourself, but it might help you to realize that you are lost. A strong affliction is profound, yet painful. It reminds you that the truth will set you free, but first it will hurt like hell. What afflicts one person, however, may not afflict another with sufficient severity. As you make your way through this difficult life, you must find the afflictions that are right for you. For only in darkness, light. Only in paradox, truth. Only in affliction, affirmation. And I'm going to read three of these. The first is called Succeeding at Failure. The quote is from Winston Churchill. Success is the ability to go from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. We often think of failure in a negative light, but if you adopt the right attitude, you can make failure a constant and loyal friend, the one thing you can count on in a shifting, fickle world. If you can learn to experience the bitter taste of defeat at the very moment you commit yourself to a new project, what more can go wrong? Such a preemptive approach to failure can save both time and heartache. Another helpful approach is to see failure as a great teacher. In this light, a broken career is actually a rich compost of defeated experiments, success, a progression of failures that lead you somewhere. Finally, you can treat failure as your life's true work. Great artists have always known that the secret of fulfillment is to have a task you can devote your entire life to. But to sustain it, to sustain you, it must be something you cannot possibly do. When failure is my goal, I cannot fail. The second is called Hopelessness Can Change the World. The quote is from Archbishop Oscar Romero, who was asked why he was attending to the sick at a hospital for incurables, said, "We are all incurables." When you look around you, it is easy to feel hopeless. Things always seem to be getting worse, not better. Even those of us still working for a better tomorrow can have a bad day, week, or lifetime when all seems lost. But such a lapse of faith should not be feared. On the contrary, you should welcome it as a revelation. Our situation is hopeless. Our cause is impossible. You are faced with a stark choice. Do you dedicate yourself to an impossible cause, or do you look after your own, making do as best you can? The choice is clear. You must dedicate yourself to an impossible cause. Why? Because we are all incurable. Because solidarity is a form of tenderness. Because the simple act of caring for the world itself is a victory. Take a stand, not because it will lead to anything, but because it is the right thing to do. We never know what can or can't be done, only what must be done. I dedicate myself to an impossible cause. And to conclude, the agony of being connected to everything in the universe. Quote from Viktor Frankl, "What is to give light must endure burning." Many of us have set out on the path of enlightenment. We long for a release of selfhood in some kind of mystical union with all things. But that moment of epiphany, when we finally see the whole pattern and sense our place in the cosmic web, can be a crushing experience from which we never fully recover. Compassion hurts. When you feel connected to everything, you also feel responsible for everything, and you cannot turn away. Your destiny is bound with the destinies of others. You must either learn to carry the universe or be crushed by it. You must grow strong enough to love the world, yet empty enough to sit down at the same table with its worst horrors. To seek enlightenment is to seek annihilation, rebirth, and the taking up of burdens. You must come prepared to touch and be touched by each and everything in heaven and hell. I am one with the universe, and it hurts.
Our next reader is Paul Murray.
Good morning, all. This is an important day for a number of people, particularly for the family of Carl Cannon, our late member of this church, and my closest friend, who died on this day 2 years ago. And had a lovely service here, by the way, with Bridget presiding, and a host of people from Donegal singing the Hills of Donegal. I'll always remember. But What I want to read today is very typical of Carl. Carl was a person who punctured pretentiousness, who believed firmly that received wisdom was only received at the time you heard it, and after that, you make your own mind up. He was a breaker of icons, and I think he would have appreciated very much and probably read it, a book called Courage, the Joy of Living Dangerously, and it's by Osho. And there's a nice little piece here, which to me epitomized a lot about Carl Cannon. The greatest fear in the world is of the opinions of others. And the moment you are unafraid of the crowd, you are no longer a sheep. You become a lion. A great roar arises in your heart, the roar of freedom. The Buddha has actually called it the lion's roar. When a man reaches an absolutely silent state, he roars like a lion. For the first time, he knows what freedom is, because now there is no fear of anybody's opinion. What people say does not matter. Whether they call you a saint or a sinner is immaterial. Your whole and sole judge is God. And by God, a person is not meant at all. God simply means the whole universe. It's not a question of having to face a person. You have to face the trees and the rivers, the mountains and the stars, the whole universe. And this is our universe. We are part of it. There's no need to be afraid of it. There's no need to hide anything from it. In fact, even if you try, you cannot hide. The whole knows it already. The whole knows more about you than you know about yourself. And the second point is even more significant. God has already judged. It is not something that is going to happen in the future. It has already happened. He has judged. So even the fear of that judgment withers away. It is not a question of some judgment day at the end. You need not tremble. The judgment day happened on the first day. The moment he created you, he already judged you. He knows you. You are a bit of his creation. If something goes wrong with you, he is responsible, not you. If you go astray, he's responsible, not you. How can you be responsible? You are not your own creation. If you paint something and it goes wrong, you cannot say the painting is the cause of it. The painter is the cause. So, there is no need to be afraid of the crowd or of some imaginary God at the end of the world asking you what you've done and what you haven't done. He has already judged. That is really significant. It has already happened. You're free. And the moment one knows that one is totally free to be oneself, life starts having a dynamic quality about it. Fear creates fetters. Freedom gives us wings. Courage, the Joy of Living Dangerously, by Osho.
Our next reader is Dennis.
We've already heard some words from St. Patrick's breastplate in our prayers this morning. And this is it from our old hymn book. What I love about this is the focus, the Celtic focus on the natural world. I bind unto myself today the virtues of the starlit heaven, the glorious sun's life-giving ray, the whiteness of the moon at even, the flashing of the lightning free, the whirling wind's tempestuous shocks, the stable earth, the deep salt sea around the old eternal rocks. I bind unto myself today the power of God to hold and lead, his eye to watch, his might to stay, his ear to hearken to my need, the wisdom of my God to teach, his hand to guide, his shield to ward, the word of God to give me speech, his heavenly host to be my God. And I'm now going to recite from the Old Testament a passage from the prophet Isaiah, chapter 55, and it's known as the Everlasting Covenant by the Jews. I hope my brain is in gear for this, but here goes. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him turn unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are high above the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth and bud, that it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it will prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. For ye shall go out with joy, and be led forth with peace. And the mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn will come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off.
Our next, now we have a time of prayer and silence, and this silence will be brought to an end by the choir singing. Lord God, maker of stars and galaxies, we have wintered enough, mourned enough, oppressed ourselves enough. Our souls are too cold and hurried, our dreams all but forgotten, and our hopes unheard. We are waiting to rise from the dead. In this, the season of steady rebirth, we awaken to the power so abundant, so holy, that returns each year through the earth and the sky.
We will find our hearts again and our good spirits. We will love and believe and give and wonder and feel again the eternal powers. The flow of life constantly moves upwards through the glorious spring, then another and now another. Let us be mindful of what is happening in this wonderful world, and let us be grateful and awake to its wonder. We now have a time of silence. Our next reader is Thurin.
I'm going to read two poems by an American poet of Dutch and Barbadian parentage who lives in Santa Cruz, California. She's called Danusha Lameris. Inshallah. I don't know when it slipped into my speech, that soft word meaning, if God wills it. Inshallah. I'll see you next summer. The baby will come in spring, inshallah. Inshallah, this year we will have enough rain. So many plans I've laid have unraveled easily as braids beneath my mother's quick fingers. Every language must have a word for this, a word our grandmothers uttered under their breath as they pinned the whites soaked in lemon, hung them to dry in the sun, or peeled potatoes, dropping the discarded skins into a bowl. Our sons will return next month, inshallah. Inshallah, this war will end soon. Inshallah, the rice will be enough to last through winter. How lightly we learn to hold hope, as if it were an animal that could turn around and bite your hand. And still we carry it, the way a mother would, carefully, from one day to the next. Small kindnesses. I've been thinking about the way when you walk down a crowded aisle, people pull in their legs to let you by. Or how strangers still say, bless you, when someone sneezes, a leftover from the bubonic plague. Don't die, we're saying. And sometimes when you spill lemons from your grocery bag, someone else will help you pick them up. Mostly, we don't want to harm each other. We want to be handed our cup of coffee hot and to say thank you to the person handing it, to smile at them, and for them to smile back, for the waitress to call us honey when she sets down the bowl of clam chowder, and for the driver in the red pickup truck to let us pass. We have so little of each other now, so far from tribe and fire, only these brief moments of exchange. What if they are the true dwelling of the holy? These fleeting temples we make together when we say, here, have my seat. Go ahead, you first. I like your hat.
The poet Alfred Hausmann was born in 1859 and he died in 1936. And at the age of 20, he wrote this poem. Loveliest of trees. Loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough and stands about the woodland ride wearing white for Eastertide. Now of my 80 years and 10, 20 will not come again, and take from 70 springs a score, it only leaves me 50 more. And since to look at things in bloom, 50 springs are little room, About the woodlands I will go to see the cherry hung with snow.
Our final reader is Madeline.
Forgiveness. When someone hurts me, I have the right to be angry. However, it is important to remember that exercising the right to be angry keeps the hurt alive. Forgiving is letting go of the right to be angry. It is a way to promote my well-being. Since forgiveness involves our emotional life, we are not in complete control of the process. We cannot force ourselves to forgive, no matter how strongly we believe that we should. All we can do is lean ourselves into being willing to forgive and hope that over time our anger will fade. Sometimes we're so angry and hurt that all we can ask is that in time the willingness to forgive will come to us. This will be a first step on the path to forgiveness. Forgiveness is not pardon. To pardon is to gloss over an offence as if it didn't matter. Pardon is more for politicians who have no personal stake in the matter. In contrast to pardon, forgiveness begins by acknowledging the hurt and only then explores the possibility of giving up the anger and continuing the relationship in spite of the offence. Forgiveness does not say that didn't matter. Forgiveness says that really hurt and it really harmed our relationship, but I don't want to be angry about it anymore. Forgiveness is not reconciliation. Forgiveness and reconciliation are not quite the same. Forgiveness happens when we let go of our anger towards someone who has hurt us. Forgiveness can be one-sided. It need not be reciprocated by the other person. We can forgive on our own, but it takes two to reconcile. Reconciliation happens when both parties forgive each other and decide to continue the relationship in some form that feels safe for both of them. Forgiving is not forgetting. It is giving up our anger so that when we remember the incident, the sting of pain is no longer there. Forgiveness is a process, not an event. While we can't control our feelings, we can set ourselves to the tasks that are essential to allow the process of forgiving. The first act of forgiveness is to honor the fact that we have been hurt. If we tell ourselves it was nothing, we seethe inwardly and so delay the process of healing. Then we need to view what has happened from the perspective of the other person. Perhaps they view the world from a very different perspective. The next step is to step out of self-righteousness and remember we are all human. We are all in need of forgiveness.